Golf Podcast, presented by Golficity, where we bring you the tips, instruction, and support you need to get the most out of your golf game. And now your hosts, Frank and Mike.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Golf Podcast. This is episode number 301. I hope everybody enjoyed the 300th episode. I know we did.
We did. It was great.
We sure did.
We did.
So if you did, let us know what you thought. That was a real treat for us getting a chance to record at the YouTube space in New York City. Mm-hmm. Really gave me some great ideas for our own podcast setup.
Oh, yeah. You know? A lot of ideas came out of YouTube space that day. A
lot of ideas. Uh-huh. So the update, if you've been following along a little bit on our social platforms as well as on Golficity and the app, we are very happy to announce that we are building out a brand new office slash studio for 2020. Super excited about that because if you've seen some of the behind the scenes, as much as I've enjoyed doing this here, we're in Mike's home office. It has served us really well. It's just getting a little bit crowded. Every time we go to reset some of these cameras and lights,
yeah, you got to like limbo.
Yeah. It's definitely a delicate thing. I almost fell through your window before trying to get around in here. So excited to do that. And we're going to build out a new podcast area. And the idea too being, and the whole reason we're doing this is to be able to bring more content to you guys. We want the studio there so we can bring some more podcasts on the platform, also bringing in some more guests, just a lot of ways that we can do new things. And we're going to be introducing some new shows on the channels. So make sure you get the Golficity app so you guys can see all of that. And we're always open to your feedback, stuff you guys want to see. But we've got some ideas of some stuff that we want to put together.
We do. And today we're going to Home Depot to pick out paint.
Right.
So, you know, it's coming along. I went there the other day. I just swung by and they kicked the drop ceiling out because it's the drop ceiling. So what, 1980?
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
and we need room to swing a club, man.
Yeah. And that's the main reason. Nothing personal. If you have a drop ceiling, great. But, you know, we needed a place to swing a club. So we had to turn it from an 8-foot ceiling into a 10-foot ceiling. So that's out, which is great. The lights are in. We're going to go check that out today.
Yeah.
And slowly but surely, it's going to come along. I mean, where are we right now? December 10th?
Yes.
I mean, we got about 20 days before we
December
want to get
11th. Into the, 11th. December 11th.
So about 20 days before we want to get into the space. I think we'll get there.
I'm really looking forward to it. And I think, like I said, it's going to bring some new and exciting things to the Golficity platform. So really just excited and can't wait to be able to share that with everybody out there. This is going to be a fun one. A couple things. Today we're going to talk about short game. We've had this question happen a lot and everybody kind of loves to be able to make those chip shots drop and stop. And we're going to talk about two ways you can do that. So this is ultimately going to be as much as sure. It looks great when the ball stops, you know what I mean? Checks up like you see some of the pros doing and things like that. But more importantly, from a scoring area, obviously, anytime we get around the green, we've talked about this before, that's where the scoring really happens. So the dramatic difference it's going to make in your scoring of being able to have that first putt in a 5-foot range versus that 12 to 15 is going to be huge. And a big part of that is your chipping. So if you're, and especially too, this is something that for your mid-level golfers and your newer golfers, chances are you're not hitting a lot of greens in regulation, so you're having to have more chip shots. So the more accurate you can become with this shot, you can make up for some lost ground, if that makes sense, for not being able to put it close, whatever. But no matter what level of golfer you're at, you're going to have to chip. So if you can do this, and there's going to be two different techniques to get it a little bit closer, you're going to see your scoring better as a result of it.
So you mean to tell me that we're actually going to learn how to get the ball to stop without it being a lucky thing? Because I feel like when it happens, I'm like, wow, did you see that stop? You know, you see that pullback? It's almost like it's lucky that it happened.
Well, there's no doubt that there's going to be a certain degree of it that it just kind of happens. You just kind of strike the ball right or whatever it may be. But if you can truly understand the mechanics of why it's happening,
bingo,
then you can do it without having to rely on just pure chance.
Exactly.
But the interesting part we'll talk about, there's actually two ways to get it done. You can handle it with spin. You can also handle it with loft. Mm-hmm. So knowing both ways will allow you to adapt, because golf is really, truly a game of adapting. You have to adapt different situations. It's not like we're playing from the exact same tight lie every time. Mm-hmm. So you have to be able to assess that and say, what do I need to do with this particular situation to make it work? Because you can't make one particular type of shot work in every single situation.
Right.
And we'll talk about why that is in a second. The other thing we wanted to mention here, we talked about the office update. Some questions. I just the other day, or just on the way in, actually, I tweeted out just saying if anybody had any questions for the show, because I always like to kind of get what you guys have, you know, out there, what questions you have. So we tweeted this out. Couple of questions came in. Funny one, you know, again, it's all, you know, in jest, but Jake Weaver says, is Ed D'Souza really as weird as he seems on Twitter?
Yes.
And I will say in the best possible way.
In the best way.
He is. Yeah. Ed is great. Ed is just a great guy. So happy to have him on the growing Golficity team. He's just been putting together some excellent content for the website. I love reading his stuff, but even more so, we got him working on a special project, which is going to debut in 2020. And I'm really excited about this one because mm-hmm. we've gotten to see some of the work, and he's out there putting some serious work in.
He really is.
You could tell he's passionate.
Yeah,
he's passionate about it.
He really is.
So look for more of that type of stuff coming from Eddie real soon. We got another one here from, Mike's been a long time follower and listener of the show. I always make sure I feel bad if I'm pronouncing his name wrong, but Mike Ryder.
Yeah, that sounds right.
That sounds right. Ryder, yeah. He says, this is mainly a question for Mike. He says, but what are some of your go-to exercises that pertain to golf fitness, particularly flexibility? He said, the winter months stink in Ohio. My goal is to be healthier for my family, my kids, and I want to work with the first tee of Cleveland. So that's a great question. What would you say when it comes to specific to golf?
Great question. And the winters stink here in New York, New Jersey too, Mike. So what do I do? I mean, I've been consistent with working out in a facility that challenges every aspect of your body, core strength, things like pull-ups, squats. You know, I even take a boxing class on like Thursday nights. You know, and believe it or not, think about it. When you're punching a boxing bag, and you're planting your feet and you're turning your hips, mm-hmm. you're really exercising that golf movement every single time, and you're just tightening that core. So I hear you loud and clear, be healthier for my family. I mean, you know, picking up a six-year-old and a two-year-old every night to carry them up the flight of stairs to bed. And you say to yourself, like, I don't ever want to stop doing that, or I don't want to be able to not do that.
Right.
You know,
right.
I want to stay strong for my family. I want to be able to do things around the house. You know, it goes above and beyond golf. And for me, it's just sticking to the schedule at the gym. Believe me, I go as much as I go. I don't want to go. I'm exhausted at the end of the night. I go sometimes at 7 p.m. at night. But you know what? The thing is, I stick with it because I feel so good after it. I like to stay flexible throughout the winter. And that's really the only way to do it, man. Those exercises that I put in, you know. So find a program that works for you, Mike, and then find a good diet that works for you. Believe it or not, that goes a long way too.
They do work hand in hand. Yep. And something interesting, I've been in that same boat of constantly lamenting about winter. We got a foot of snow like 2 weeks ago. It rained. It finally went away yesterday. I was thinking to you like, hey, we had a couple of 50-degree days. Maybe we can get out and play.
Right.
And then it snowed last night. We got another 2 inches of snow. So it's a pain. And I've always complained about it as a golfer. It's not my thing. However, trying to shift my perspective a little bit, I heard a great thing that Kevin Sprecher said the other day. He said he actually feels like we here in the North have a somewhat of a benefit, if you want to think of it this way, versus guys who play year round, because we have this forced break that forces us to work on other things. Like if you're just in the middle of your seasons all year long, you're always playing. He said there's never a time to stop and reset and work on the weaknesses. So his, you know, kind of idea that he passed along to us was identify your weaknesses throughout the season, mm-hmm. you know, make that mental note of them. And then in the winter, that's when you get the chance to grind it out. Well, whether that be working on your swing in a new swing, you know, path or whatever it may be in the simulator, or your putting stroke, which is what I've been doing indoors on the putting mat, or something with your physicality that you feel like is holding you back, you can design a exercise routine, a stretching routine, whatever, to improve in that area. So one big thing we're going to be doing, we're going to see Kevin Sprecher again next week. Working with him and Ben Shear, who we worked with before. If you don't know who Ben is, you guys got to check him out. Look him up on Twitter and all the different social networks. He's worked with Webb Simpson before, tour players. He works with, you know, junior level all the way up. And he is one of the premier authorities when it comes to fitness and strength training and flexibility. So we're both going to kind of do an assessment with him I'm in the same kind of boat, Mike, where I feel like I need to work on my flexibility. I've been doing a little bit more of that. Like you said, with the boxing, I've seen a lot of guys with the medicine ball, throwing it same against concept. The wall, turn. Yep. Mm-hmm. That those are the type of movements that can really help, as you said, strengthen that core. Not only will the core and that help the turning and rotational movements, but a big thing that we all know in golf is back injuries.
Right.
I've struggled with it for a long time. And you know, it's known, you know, widely that if you are able to strengthen your core, it's going to take a lot of stress off of the back. And look, let's be honest, a lot of us, we've got office jobs, desk jobs, you do a lot of sitting. I was reading a little bit about this last night. The more we sit, the more those types of muscles atrophy. You know, we get in these comfortable positions, we're no longer having to support our body. You know, go back 100,000 years ago, human beings, maybe we found a rock to sit on,
right.
But we didn't have chairs. You know what I mean? We're sitting on the floor and we relied on these muscles in our core to support us and hold us up. So now that we rely less and less on that, the atrophy, you know, we're sitting, some of us are commuting an hour, you know, we're driving, we're in the car for 2 hours a day. We're at a desk for 8 hours a day. We're 10 hours a day where we're stagnant. So if you can do these things that like that, we're just medicine ball punching, there's body weight movements, if you don't have that access to things, those are the types of things that will get that strength that will not only make your golf game better, but it's that longevity.
Yeah. And, you know, and cost doesn't even have to be a factor at all. If you're thinking, oh, it costs too much, you know, to join a place like that, you know, they're hundreds of dollars a month. They're not, mine's not, mine's under $100 a month, but, you know, buy a medicine ball on Amazon for $15, do some wall sits, do some overhead ball hold lunges, squats. You can accomplish 20, 30, 40, 50 exercises with one medicine ball and stay in shape and stay flexible in the winter.
No doubt about it. So, you know, and there's, you can just go right down the ladder of cost. You could use, I've seen people use bands, you know, just stretch bands, which you can buy for a couple bucks.
Right.
Whatever it is, there's a lot of ways you can do it. And we've got wealths of resources. I was going through some YouTube videos yesterday, just some body weight movements that I've been working on. And you'd be amazed, and I mean, I know you know, how much you can accomplish with push-ups, pull-ups, dips, and
it
squats.
Hits so many different muscle areas, 100%.
Right.
You know, so, and guys, check out Fitness for the Fairways. I saw a lot of things with Frank Duffy, Joe Gambino, those guys on their podcast. They talk about great ways to stay flexible. So check them out too.
You can get that podcast every Tuesday in the Golficity app. You can also get it on iTunes. Fitness for the Fairways presented by Golficity. Those guys do an excellent job, and they bring, talking about like Ben and some of these guys, they bring some tremendous guests on the show. Talk about experience and fitness and golf and stuff. These guys, they know, you know, their stuff, and who they're talking to are like the authorities on this stuff. So it's a wealth of information. You're definitely going to want to check that out.
What are the questions that we have? Sully, when would Sully get hired to work in the golf field for the ever glorious Golficity? Send your resumes to Golficity.
Look, like you said, you guys have seen, we've been dramatically expanding the platform. That's been the huge goal for us for 2020. Each year, we like to set one huge goal for ourselves. Our big goal for 2020 is expanding the platform. We've said it before. If you're somebody who truly has a passion for golf, or has something very unique to say, especially in the golf space, get in contact with us. Obviously, we can't take everybody on. We're really looking for people who we feel share a very similar passion and path to us. There's no doubt there's a commitment to it. We're 7 years into this podcast, right. You know, and we're just finally building out an office. Think about that.
Yeah.
We're doing this from the home.
We've been talking about it since day one.
Right. But we know it's a long progression. We're looking for people who are committed and into it for the long haul, and are just doing it because they love it. We love it. That's why we do it. But if you feel like you truly share that and you've got something you want to pitch us, there's a lot of ways to get in contact with us. You know, you can DM us, you can email us, podcast@golfficity.com. Like I said, we can't guarantee we're going to take on everybody, right. But we're looking for people who we feel like are very unique and have ways that can bring more to the Golficity community, because that's what it's really all about.
Yeah.
That's what it's really all about. So, all right. What do you say we do a quick word from our sponsors? We got a lot to talk about with these chip shots. There's actually a lot that goes into it. So I'm interested to dig in, to dive into that. Let's do a quick word from our sponsors and hop over to it.
It's the holidays. Finding the perfect gift can always be a challenge, you know, especially for me, like Secret Santa. Like anytime I pick out a Secret Santa, it's a golfer. I'm like, yes.
Yeah, yeah,
you
know, score.
It's right. Easy, right? But if there's a golfer on your list, I've got a bunch on mine. I mean, it's easy. Give the number one gift in golf. That's Titleist. I like to give Titleist golf balls because I like getting them myself. I mean, it's that easy. You know, who doesn't love a fresh set of golf balls, especially Titleist golf balls? You know, unwrap a dozen Pro V1s, Pro V1X, AVX golf balls. No one's going to be mad at you for that gift. I could promise you that. Mm-hmm. So when you tear that package open this holidays, you see the Titleist script, you immediately just want to get out on the course and tee it up. It just, you get all fired up. And here's the best part. You don't have to worry about sizes when you buy golf balls or styles.
True.
You know, young or old, beginner, expert, they fit every golfer. I mean, there's no gift receipt required on this one. So take my advice, put a birdie down for yourself on this season's holiday shopping list. Give Titleist Pro V1, Pro V1X, or AVX golf balls a try. Check them out. Titleist, the number one ball in golf and the number one gift in golf too.
It's a smart play.
Yeah, right?
You come out a winner every time. Guys, also the ShotScope V2, it's the world's smartest golf watch. You've heard us talk about it here on the show a lot. You've seen it in a lot of our videos. The ShotScope has over 40,000 courses mapped, and they offer incredible stat tracking technology, which we all know can help you off the course as well. We talked about it at the top of the show. Knowing the areas where you need to improve. It is part of my routine every year. I dig into those ShotScope stats towards the end of the season. I look at the areas where I need to get a little bit better. It is boom, right in front of your face. There's no denying it. They make a lot of very detailed stats very simple to understand,
right,
in the app and in the dashboard. So you see it and you say, this is what I got to work on. And then you can go out and improve on it. Additionally, while you're on the course, they've got that laser-like GPS. The GPS is incredibly accurate. You and I have compared it to range finders. We've looked at the yardage stakes, everything that's out there. I have never had an issue where I felt like, no way, this thing is off. It is remarkably accurate. So you got that GPS when you're on the course. You've got those stats when you get off the course. Everything is there. It's hands-off. It's all done by the watch. That's why it's the world's smartest golf watch. So it's all that data at your fingertips. You can get yourself a ShotScope V2 by visiting shotscope.com/golficity. You can use our coupon code V2Golficity for an additional, whatever the discount is at the moment. You're going to get the best one with that. We are on top of it. The ShotScope team has been incredible working with us on that, making sure that the Golficity audience out there, you guys are always getting the best deal. And right now they've got a festive offer for $119. I laugh because that is such a killer deal. I mean, we've seen this thing high, you know, almost to $200 before. To get that type of deal is incredible. And you're, like you said, you're getting not only the GPS, but also the shot tracking. Check them out. Go to shotscope.com/golficity.
And by the way, if it's not on your goals list for 2020, you should put it on your list to start tracking your stats in your golf
for game. Sure.
So definitely do that. And lastly, just want to thank FootJoy. Over the course of a round, players can face a variety of weather conditions, and we saw it in Scotland. Every single weather condition we could have been faced with, we got it. Whether it's early morning frost, midday sun, afternoon showers, you name it, FootJoy offers performance products made specifically for golf that allow you to play comfortably and play well no matter, you know, how the conditions change. So from base layers to thermal mid layers, the full zip fleece and rain jackets, you know, by layering properly, you can quickly adapt and keep your head in the game. Build your own layering system to combat any weather condition at footjoy.com/MEDP.
There you go. We're both, here's examples.
We layer up and then we layer off.
Especially in this weather. Yep. All right. So let's talk a little bit about these chip shots, and ultimately, we talk about things like, you know, drop and stop, but what it really comes down to is proximity. And it's another thing that we measure as far as stats go, speaking of which. But if you can improve that proximity to the hole, your scoring is going to get better. I mean, done, like, put that in stone. That's the reality. Because that's where the scoring happens. Like I said, it's where we start to see these three putts and things like that, that we start to get frustrated, double bogey, triple bogey, whatever it may be. And it's largely because you're not giving yourself a really great chance to score when your first putt is out from downrange 30, 40 feet. So again, by getting these chip shots to stop and check up a little bit closer to the hole, you're going to see that improve. But so first thing we got to do is we got to understand it. Like you said, Mike, sometimes it just happens. You know, we all hit lucky shots right out there. I mean, even
why does it happen?
Even a blind squirrel gets a nut once in a while. I mean, we all know that it happens. But if you can understand why it happens rather than just rely on those few times that you get lucky, you're going to be able to take advantage of it and make it happen more often. So why does it happen? There's basically two ways that you can get that ball to stop. All right. First would be spin. Mm-hmm. Spin is that backspin you see when it checks up nicely. The other thing is going to be loft. Obviously, if you come in at a higher attack angle, that ball is going to stop quicker than if it was coming in lower and hotter. So you can effectively get that chip shot to come to rest using either one. The thing is understanding how they both work and how to do it, and also when to use it. So remember, a big thing, just like from, look, essentially every shot that you play out there, one of the biggest factors that comes in is going to be the lie. And I think one of the big determining factors, the difference between when you see a lot of amateur golfers and your higher level golfers, is the degree to which they understand how the lie is going to affect it. Just as I said before here on the podcast, listen to Phil Mickelson sometimes talk through his approach to why he hit a certain shot. And he is going to spend a lot of time talking about the lie and what that's going to affect, because he knows that that's going to dramatically change what type of shot he can play. You can't play every type of shot everywhere. It just won't work. So if you've got that nice clean lie in the short grass, there's going to be not much stopping you from putting that spin on the ball.
Right.
You and I, just this year when we did that test for the wedge, the groove wear test, we did some tests on the Trackman to see what difference of spin you would have on the ball in a clean lie versus anything that's getting in the way, whether it be the rough, wet, sand, whatever it may be.
Significant results between.
Significant difference because of when that the way the physics of it works, of being able to bite into the club. So similar type of thing is going to be with loft. Here, you know, you got to look at that lie again. Is it a downhill lie? Is it a propped up lie? Mm-hmm. Obviously, if you're in the rough and it's propped up a little bit, it's easier to get that loft under it and get it up in the air. But if it's a tight lie downhill, it's going to be harder to get it to come up higher.
Right.
So you got to look at those types of things and say, what is the best possible play here? And how am I going to make it work? So the first thing you do in any of these situations is look at that lie and start to try to make a smart decision. Mm-hmm. It's just because it looks really cool to get that ball to check up with backspin doesn't mean it's the right play every single time, right? So first thing, let's talk about if the option were to go with stopping the ball with spin, how would you go about doing that? And the first thing it really comes down to is that clean contact. You got to make sure that you're able to pinch that ball cleanly between the face of the club and the top of the turf.
So it's no turf. It's ball first.
It's ball first.
Because a lot of people
sure.
think like you need to come down on a ball in a different angle in order for it to create more backspin, which throws your whole swing out of whack, which causes you maybe to get chunky.
Yeah,
swing differently.
Before you come in at a steeper angle.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes there's situations where you have to come in at a steeper angle, but yeah, you don't want to get anything crazy. We're not trying to do like, I'm trying to think even what other sport to liken it to. But just, I think the bigger thing to understand is the idea of coming down and hitting ball first, then ground, versus a lot of newer golfers. It's even something that I struggle with. I hit up on the ball. It's this kind of this natural reaction to feel like you need to scoop the ball up into the air. And we try to
get spin on it that way.
You get much less spin on it that way when you try to lift it up. The idea being you want to have a downward strike. So that's the second tip here. Along with that clean contact, you want to make sure that to generate that spin, you're coming down and hitting the ball. And this is the thing that, again, it's hard to understand when you first start playing the game. It's like, I don't understand. I want the ball to go up, but I'm hitting down.
Right.
The reality is, as you hit down, the ball rides up the face of the club, and that's what creates the backspin. And this happens with all shots, you know, aside maybe from driver. This happens, and that's how that backspin is what gets the ball up in the air and what puts the spin on it to bring it back.
Right.
So by hitting down, you are forcing that ball to roll up the shaft. And then up the face of the club. Mm-hmm. And the more groove contact that you can get, the more it's going to grip. And the more grip, the more backspin. So the one thing you can definitely do, and this is for righties, if you want to hit down through impact, try to keep that left wrist flat. and firm, and you can kind of get a use to that. That's where when we don't do that, we start to cast and we flip our wrist. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's where we're subconsciously trying to flip the ball up in the air. But if you can understand and trust it, that by hitting down, it's going to, you know, come out, and that backspin is what's going to get it up in the air and get it to eventually stop. If you can trust it, you're going to be able to do that shot easier. But again, it takes some getting used to, some understanding. But also, when we say hitting that ball first, then the ground, a big mistake with ball contact would be hitting the ground first. As soon as you do that, the ground, obviously, the earth is not going anywhere, right?
Right.
So, I mean, aside from maybe a divot or two, but what that's going to do is it's going to dramatically take speed off that club. And it's going to we talk about like decelerating, it's going to slow everything down, and that's when things come up short. You want to face that clean contact. But going back to clean contact, this is something that I've been trying to focus more on myself. I thought recently we heard Tiger talking a little bit about it, you know, where he said for all shots, his father taught him to swing as hard as he could so long as he could still make solid center of face contact. So solid center of face contact was priority one.
Yep.
Speed was priority two. Mm-hmm. So as he worked to always make that center face contact, then he would start to ramp up the speed. But then realizing that there's going to be this curve that levels off, that as you get faster and faster, it's going to be harder and harder to make that center face contact. So that's where the skill comes in the practice. As you practice more and more, you can do that. But priority number one is that clean contact. Because at the end of the day, if you don't have clean contact, the ball is not going to do what you want it to do. Hitting it off the heel, the toe, too high on the face, too low on the face, all these things introduce variables where that ball can go in a direction that you didn't expect it to go.
Right.
So I think clean contact is important. That downward strike is important. And these are things you can practice. I've been working on it. Again, we talk about winter, mm-hmm. right? I put a cheap mat in my basement. This is the one we got for the hole-in-one challenge.
Yeah.
Right? Got this thing off of Amazon so we didn't mess up the tee box. I threw it in my basement. I got some wiffle balls, and I've got my Chippo down yep. there. And I'm just working on just making, you know, downward contact and just very short chip shots over and over and over.
Throughout the winter.
That's it. And you kind of groove and you get an understanding for it. And then you start to, you understand, you see it working. So you start to trust it more. Right. And that's where the confidence right. comes in.
All right. So let's back up a second, because I want to paint an example here. So let's say you got 40 yards to the green on your approach shot and you're dead center of the fairway. Nice, clean, tight lie. Okay. In our particular golf games, because they're very similar, would that 40-yard shot, would it make sense to use the 52-degree there because you need less loft, as if that 50-yard shot was just right in the first cut of rough, go with the 60-degree? Is it going to change your club choice?
It certainly could. It depends on the type of shot you want to play, too.
Okay.
So, for example, that would be more of a pitch shot than a chip shot 40 yards out, right?
Okay.
So, it depends. I mean, a chip shot...
But if you're 40 yards out middle fairway to a front pin location,
yeah.
you could take a 50-yard shot in and spin it back to the front hole.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
If you execute this right.
Right.
Should we be thinking about pin locations too?
Well, that's where we're thinking. A good way to think about it is you're thinking, first of all, let's say you're trying to decide whether you're going to land a little bit far and let the spin bring it back. Or
so someone like me who's steep, and I know that I can get really good spin on the ball because I come in so steep,
yeah.
that it usually will hit and pull back.
Right.
So it feels like a strategy. If you have a front pin and it's 40, maybe I play a 55 and pull it back.
For sure. If the shot you're going to play is going to impart enough spin to bring it back, then yeah, you'd want to aim your target slightly past the pin because you know right. it's coming back.
And if I was in the rough, maybe I would take a 60-degree and just try to hit a 40-degree shot.
Right. Well, because the reason is exactly what defining here is the spin.
Right.
So you're defining it based off of spin. So you're saying I'm in, and this is the same thing, you could carry this onto our conversation of a chip shot, right?
Yes.
I'm in the fairway. I've got a nice, clean, tight lie. There's nothing stopping me from imparting spin on the ball. Mm-hmm. I know how, in this case, to put spin on the ball. Right. So the strategy I decide to play for this one is going to be a high spin shot that's going to come back towards the hole.
Correct.
Now, if you're in the rough, the thing you start to tell yourself is, I physically can't put the same amount of spin on it because I know that that grass is going to come between my club face and the ball, mm-hmm. thus stopping the grooves from doing the work they need to do and put that spin on it. So in this case, I can't play that first shot that I wanted to play. I need to play some other shot because I'm not going to be able to put enough spin on it to bring it back. So it wouldn't be a smart play to aim past the hole at that point. At that point, yeah, you're going to use more loft to stop the ball. So maybe a 60 is the play or whatever you've got in your bag, but you're going to say, I know I can't rely on spin to bring it back. So instead, I'm going to choose my landing zone of being an area where I know wherever I land it is where it's more so going to come to rest rather than moving.
Right.
But it's all making that decision. It's like, what do you want to play and what can you play? In the rough, you can't play that spin shot. So you kind of default. In the tight lie, but in the tight lie, you have multiple options. You can play a higher spinning shot. You could also play more of a bump and run shot where you're not relying on spin. You're relying on roll out. It's really what you've practiced, what you feel most comfortable with. But no matter what, we've seen it before for ourselves in those tight lies. That's where the execution becomes so important because you do need to execute. If you were not to do what we're talking about here, a downward strike and a clean contact, that's going to be a disaster.
Of course.
So if you hit behind the ball in a tight lie with a very high lofted club, depending on your bounce, most likely it's going to like a knife just go into that turf.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And that's when we end up coming up way short or whatever. But if you execute it correctly, it can definitely be the right shot.
Okay.
For sure. Mm-hmm. So the last thing here of the third point for if you're going to use spin to stop it is you've got to use some speed. Backspin requires speed. You've got to come down through that ball. Now, I'm not saying anything crazy. It depends on how far you are away, but understand that it's not a conservative shot. If you're using spin to stop that ball, it's by definition, it's not a super conservative shot. You need to be committed to it because not only is it that clean contact and that downward strike that creates spin, it's speed.
Right.
If you were to do that in your mind in very slow motion, you're not going to, if you slowed it way down, there's not as much speed as if you come through the ball a little bit quicker. So if you need spin to stop, you also need speed. So what that comes down to is trusting it. Confidence in it. We talk about confidence a lot because if you don't trust it and you're not confident in it, you're not going to come through it with enough speed. If you don't come through it with enough speed, you're not going to have enough spin. And chances are, if you're relying on spin, your target is going to be a little bit further towards the pin or whatever it may be because you know the spin is what's going to stop it. And if you don't have the spin, you land at that target, it's going to blow by the hole.
Right. Well, we're not talking like a caveman chopping wood type of like axe.
No. We're just talking
to add a little bit more.
We're just saying commit to it.
Yes.
I think the simplest way to say it is commit to it. If you decommit and decelerate, that's where you come into a problem because you're using, again, your target should be where you want. And this is something we've talked about on the podcast before. Instead of your target being the hole, it should really be where you want to land it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So let's say you pick a target that's only a foot from the hole to land it because you know you're going to, your plan anyway, if all things go to plan, is to spin it and stop it. Mm-hmm. Now you hit the ball with, you know, to that landing zone, but you don't impart enough spin because you didn't commit to the speed. It's going to roll much further than you expected. And there you missed your target.
Yeah, I love watching players like when we play Baltus Roll with Greg or Sprecher, even just watching those guys just stop those shots onto the green.
Because you look at them and they're so darn confident in
it.
Because they've played it so many times. They know how to play the shot. They know the physics of it. And then they commit to it. And all of us have felt this. No matter what level of experienced golfer you are, you felt this in some manner. There's some club in your bag, some shot and some distance that you can hit with a great deal of confidence.
Sure.
So you go into that shot with zero hesitation. You have a strategy and a plan in mind and you execute on it. It's the shots that you're not used to hitting that those things kind of go out the window. So if you can think like, okay, that 157 iron shot that I just have no trouble with because, you know, from a clean lie, 7 iron shot that I have no trouble with, that's the feeling I need to get with other shots. And what does it come from? It comes from practice and knowing it and understanding it. So now the other option would be, that's option one, stopping with spin. The other option is stopping it with loft. So again, going back to where it is, this might be a situation where you don't have the option to use spin. It could be because of the lie. Again, anything that gets in between those grooves in the ball is going to stop that spin. So how would you do this? First thing is try opening that face up a little bit. Even if you're using a high lofted club, some of us chip with a 58, a 60, you still want to open it up a little bit to get that loft that you want. Because again, remember, the reason for the loft is you're relying on loft to stop it.
Right.
And it all comes down to that target. Again, if you want to come in at a super steep angle, maybe your target is very close to the hole. If it's not, and you're going to rely on a little bit of run out, maybe it's a little bit further, you know, closer to you from the hole. And again, also assessing, you got to look at everything. Don't just look at the lie, look at the landing zone. Is it downhill? Is it uphill? If it's an uphill green to a pin, you know it's going to stop quicker. If it's downhill, it's going to take more time to stop. So again, you're going through this in your mind. And the more you do this, the quicker you'll be able to assess and do that. But again, bringing your awareness to it, even as a beginner golfer, is going to make you a better golfer. Because if you can make yourself a better thinker out there, you're going to make less of those mistakes because you just didn't take something into account. So open up that face. Another thing you could do is move the ball a little bit forward in your stance. Unlike the other shot, you don't want to hit as much down on this.
Right.
Here, if anything, you want that club to be parallel to the ground. There's really no situation where you want to be hitting up on it other than driver. Driver, we do train ourselves to hit on an up angle because we're relying on that to get the ball up in the air more than so than loft. That's why drivers, you don't have a bunch of grooves on there. You're not trying to put backspin on it. Mm-hmm. But what you hear, you're more so kind of parallel to the ground. That's where we talk about just kind of grazing the grass type of thing. So we're not necessarily hitting down and pinching that ball between the turf. Here, we're just kind of hitting it parallel. But by placing it forward in your stance, it's going to be easier to come at it at that angle. And not dramatically. I don't think it has to go too far. I play most of, obviously, my wedge's center stance. Mm-hmm. And then if it's a more lofted shot, maybe I move it one or two balls forward.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about combing it off of your left heel like a driver.
Right.
You know, just a little bit. But again, speed is key.
I was going to say speed has to be important here because
you're
lofting up. So if you do take some off it, then you're just going to come up short of your target.
Right.
Like instantly.
Exactly. Or what happens when we decelerate? Like we just kind of like go under it. Like it's just like, bleh. You know what I mean? Or, and again, assessing your lie. If it's really propped up, understand that a really propped up in the rough ball is going to very quite possibly, especially with a 60 has the ability to cut right underneath it.
And it just lands in the same spot.
Exactly. It could happen. So that's where you have to think like, okay, what is the club face going to do here? Do I need to use maybe a little bit less loft?
Right.
But again, focusing on contact, even thinking of it as though it was almost on a tee where your contact needs to be. Maybe it's got to be a little bit higher in order to make that work. But you got to keep that speed because, you know, if you don't have speed, the ball's not going to get high enough in the air. And if it doesn't get high enough, especially if something that's coming up at a high trajectory because of this loft, it's kind of got to go further, higher, you know, further to carry to the distance you want it to carry to. So you want it to be able to do that. And then hopefully, because of this approach angle being much steeper, it's going to stop cold wherever it lands, wherever the target is. So that's, again, it's going to strategy and execution.
I could see as we're talking, I'm thinking in my head of all these like a fun challenge videos that you and I can do.
Yeah.
I'm thinking a tight lie 30 yards out. Like if you get the ball to stop, we get a point. If you get the ball to spin, you get a point. Mm. If you go off the green in the back, you minus a point. You know what I mean? Like
lots
of fun, because I really want to get good at this. Because like you said at the top of the show, it's so important to hitting that 20-foot putt or having a 5-foot putt. We talk about proximity.
Yeah.
And that's how we're going to 2-putt for par when we get on the green. So, you know, I think you and I, we play a lot of courses around here that are, you know, they're not incredibly difficult. I mean, there's a 340, 330 yard par fours, handful of them. And if we're able to get off the tee 260 plus, then we're going to have these great opportunities to score if we can get these balls to stop.
No doubt. And so, if you look into that, you're whatever you're using to track your stats, whether it be shot scope or if you're writing it down with old fashioned pen and pencil and paper, whatever it may be, if you look and you realize a lot of your approach shots are ending up off the green somewhere, it's even more important to get this down. But I love the challenge thing. Actually, next week on the podcast, we're going to have the guys from Game Like Training on, which I have been super excited about. And their system that they use is very similar to what you're saying, where practice becomes this fun challenge. And they use a lot of different ways where they assign things like points and you have to accomplish something before you can move on. I love that. And they're even doing it in very creative ways with kids in a way that's similar, that stimulates the brain in the way gaming does, that you always want to achieve that next level or achieve that next award or unlock, whatever it may be. They use that thing in the brain to say, as you said, challenges. If I can do this, I get this many points. And then you play games against your buddies or against yourself. You say, I got 5 points today. I got whatever. You know what I mean?
Right.
So you could do that. You could go out there and you could take a like a some sort of like a circle imaginary circle or maybe mark it off a tease or something out on the practice green and say, I'm going to try to get it to stop within that using two different techniques, a spin technique and a loft technique. And for everyone I get in there, it's a point. And I'm going to try to take 10 attempts, five of each, and then see how many points you get that day. And then come back the next day and see how many points you get that. You know what I mean? It's a great way of improving your game.
Yeah.
It goes back to like we were talking about with exercise. It's like, sure, you need to work up to things. Like today I was able to bench 150 pounds. And then a little while later, like as I, once I get to the point where I can do 10 reps of that, I make it a little bit harder on myself. Now it's 175. Once I get to 10, you know, maybe it's only two reps, but maybe when I get to 10, I go up. Same type of thing. Maybe the circle starts, it's a 5 foot radius.
Yes.
And once you get to those 10 points, make it a 5 foot radius, whatever, right. Just bring it down. You know, five and then three and then two, whatever. Make yourself continually challenging yourself to get better and better and better. And I think that that's where you're going to see it translate in the course.
And guys, who wants to see Frank bench 175 pounds? Can we make that happen? Can we try that? Can we get that on film?
The shame of it is, you know what my record was?
Die instantly because you're back.
Yeah, I probably would.
But anyway,
but I used to weightlift in college.
That's
right?
When we were in our best shape, high school, college.
Best shape. Right. I got up to 250.
Wow, really?
250.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah.
That's real impressive.
But I was still the small guy.
Right.
Because again, this is we're talking a long time ago. This is 10, 12 years ago, right? And I've been out of weightlifting in any capacity for many years. I think now 150 would be a struggle, but whatever.
Yeah.
One of my buddies back then, and the big guy in the group, AJ, was benching like—
He was a beast.
Oh, Jesus, yeah. I don't know, 375 or whatever. It was like, but he was like, he lived at the gym.
Right.
The guy was built like a wall. Yeah. I've actually seen him run through a wall.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
We were doing demolition at something when we were doing a renovation. And
I'm sure there's stories about him you can never tell.
He ran through a wall.
Yeah.
He actually ran through a wall. And I remember he had, what did he have? He had something like—
Concussion?
No. He was sick. He was sick. And like the doctor said he, you know, had to be low impact because it was something like it's like a spleen or something. And he goes,
mono?
Yeah, he had mono. He had mono. And the doctor's like, listen, you can't do anything. And then that's when we were doing helping somebody out with like renovation. Mm-hmm. And he just, like, there was the opportunity to do it. He always wanted to see if he could run. He ran through like a wall, the sheetrock.
Yeah.
The guy was a big guy. But anyway.
Who gets mono, by the way?
I know. I've had mono. We've all had mono. Come on. But
nucleosis.
But anyway, we've way digressed. But yeah. Yeah, those are the glory days of the gym.
Glory days of the gym. But
when I say 252, I mean I got like once.
Of course.
Like that was your max out. Remember you would do like
the max out.
Your last set would be the max out set. And I was doing 225 regularly. And then I got once.
Yeah, that's impressive.
That was
Frankie biceps.
That was my heyday. That was my heyday. We'll get back there when we're done. That was all body weight stuff. Anyway. I'm sure I'm gonna get plenty of people ribbing me for that one.
Yep.
I'm just already sensing the comments.
It's coming. It's coming.
Anyway, hope you guys enjoyed that. Hope you got something out of it. You know, chip shots, like I said, it's such a crucial shot. And if you have any tips you want to share, make sure you post them in the comments below if you're watching this on YouTube or Facebook. Or, you can always tweet at us. Or if you like to send us your note privately, you can email us at podcast@golficity.com. Love hearing from you guys. As I said, next week we've got the guys from Game Like Training on. You're not going to want to miss that one. Make sure you guys subscribe, hit the notification bells, because it's going to be a good one. I already know just from the little chats I've had and reading their book, this one's going to be packed with really actionable practice stuff that you guys can do. And then obviously we'll be continuing to bring you along as we build out the new office. Make sure you guys are following us on Instagram and we're even on TikTok now, wherever.
TikTok.
So you can follow us and kind of see the progression, the behind the scenes as we go. We're going to be heading over to the office later, checking on the, talking about the renovation.
Can you pick out paint? You got that eye?
Oh, yeah. I like picking out paint is a fun thing for me.
Yeah. I got a feeling you're a more than like three sample guy for the wall. Like,
oh yeah, dude! I already got some ideas. Okay. I'm feeling tundra.
Wow!
I'm feeling ice cube.
Whoa!
I think pigeon's gonna be too dark.
Okay.
But they're in the same line. I like a nice cool gray.
That cool
just,
gray.
Yeah, just kind of like keeps it cool in there. We'll see.
All right.
Wouldn't even mind doing maybe one wall kind of like accented with a little bit of like a light green, just like a hint of green.
A hint. Just like a, Martha we'll have to Stewart see. Over here.
We'll this have to see. Wonderful. I enjoy this stuff. Good. All right. That's everything we have. You can get to the show notes by going to golfcity.com/episode301, or the easy way to do it is in the Golficity app, free for Android and iOS. Go to golficity.com/app, download the app. You'll get a notification every time a new podcast goes live, bringing new podcasts to the platform, as we said. So stay tuned for that. And thanks everybody for watching. We'll see everybody again next week.